You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is David Berkus.
We often talk about leaders as we think about the grandiose speeches, the charismatic presence and all of those sort of things. And of course, none of those things matter when you're one little digital square in a Brady Bunch grid on Zoom. But there's still a lot that leaders do around culture that still matters.
One of the world's leading business thinkers, David Berkus's forward-thinking ideas and best-selling books are helping leaders and teams do their best work ever. He's the best-selling author of 4 books about business and leadership. His books have won multiple awards and have been translated into dozens of languages. His insights on leadership and teamwork have been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Harvard Business Review, USA Today, Fast Company, The Financial Times, Bloomberg Businessweek, CNN, the BBC, NPR, and CBS This Morning. Since 2017, Berkus has been ranked as one of the world's top business thought leaders by Thinkers 50. As a sought-after international speaker, his TED Talk has been viewed over 2 million times. He's worked with leaders from organizations across all industries, including Google, Stryker, Fidelity, Viacom, and even the U.S. Naval Academy. A former business school professor, Berkus holds a master's degree in organizational psychology from the University of Oklahoma and a doctorate in strategic leadership from Regent University. His most recent book is Leading from Anywhere, the Essential Guide to Managing Remote Teams, and he's our guest this week on the On Brand podcast. David, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. That was a good radio voice intro there. That was nice.
You know, I leave it all out there in the bio. It's all going to progressively go downhill from here. I've peaked too early in the show. Going to start running out of energy.
Yeah, that reminds me of every Zoom meeting I've been on in the last 12 months. So there you go. Starts out great, and then we all just end up staring at ESPN together.
Well, you know, talk about peaking early. You got right into it because I do want to talk about. I want to make sure we don't bury the lead, which is probably why we start out so strong in these virtual settings. But your new book, Leading from Anywhere, we'll get to virtual communication, because that's a part of the book and one that I'm sure is top of mind. But really, this is a book of the moment. Talk a bit about it for those that don't know.
Yeah. So the idea here, and this was an idea birthed in the midst of the pandemic in a conversation between my publisher and I and a couple of the people at the publishing house. We were actually sort of talking about a book around teams and what it takes to lead teams and that sort of a thing. And what are the characteristics of a great team, et cetera. And then obviously everything happened. The great work from home experiment began. And then we started thinking about like, well, is there a way we could pivot that? And I looked at it. And the more I looked at the market, the more I saw there are some great books out there about how to run a fully distributed company. You know, Jason Fried and David Hanemeyer Hansen with Remote, right, and the way they've run Basecamp is a great example. And then there was some good stuff out there about how to be productive when you're working from home. Lots of resources around that, because that's been a way of life for a lot of people for a long time. But there was really nothing that was in that, you know, I'm a brand manager for Frito-Lay. Our whole team used to meet in, you know, together, and now we're all working from home. What do I do? How do I survive, basically? And so that's what we pivoted to and thought, okay, there's actually, there was a good amount of research on virtual teams, BC before Corona. And so we looked at a lot of that research and went, okay, what is the difference between a lot of these thriving teams and a lot of teams that just sort of fall apart? Where did the joke that working from home was synonymous with not working come from, when the reality is most of the productivity is gained when you ask people to work from home, not lost? So all of those things put together in this book, which we turned around and we went from idea to publication in about 6 months in order to serve the now, because I was betting, and it seems like it was a bet that's starting to pay off, that around January, February, vaccination talk would start. We would see the light at the end of the tunnel. But for a lot of people, going back to the office 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, is not an option they want to take. They want increased flexibility. They may be there some days. There's a lot of talk about 3-2-2, 3 days on, 2 days at home, 2 days weekend. There's other talk about core hours where everybody's here for, you know, 10 to 2 every day, but then doesn't really matter when you come in and leave. But we're headed for a future where people are going to be working from anywhere. And so that became the, well, okay, well, if the future of work is at least hybrid remote, then what do we need to know about managing that type of team? And so that's the book we tried to put together and cover sort of everything from when you first go remote to how do you hire people, bring new members on the team, how do you synchronize people so they're actually working and collaborating together, even if they're not physically together, to even, you know, how do you say goodbye and all of those sort of things. I, you know, when I was a kid, I used to read those choose your own adventure books, and I tried to structure this one like a choose your own dilemma book. So if you're a manager trying to figure out, oh, my weekly all hands meetings are terrible and they even drain me and I'm leading it, what do I do? Okay, we got a chapter on that. Choose your own dilemma.
You know, that's fascinating. So talk a bit about the lens of leadership too, in talking about leading from anywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we really talk about leadership in this case, we often talk about leaders as, we think about the grandiose speeches, the charismatic, presence and all of those sort of things. And of course, none of those things matter when you're one little digital square in a Brady Bunch grid on Zoom. But there's still a lot that leaders do around culture that still matters. Believe it or not, a lot of the fully distributed companies that I've been studying in the past and obviously interviewing again for this book, a lot of them have stronger cultures than your average corporate culture, you know, in the US or even internationally, because leaders are much more deliberate about it, right? Culture is actually something that people run largely accidentally. It's just sort of how we do things around here. And then what's great is every company then says, oh, we've got a great culture because we're fun and playful. And like, well, lots of people are trying to do that. Like, tell me what you do to reinforce your core values. Tell me what you do to build inclusivity and a feeling of belonging. Tell me, you know, all of those sort of things. And you realize there's not really a deliberate strategy here. It's just how people are. And every once in a while we throw like a fundatory event and think that means we have a good culture. In reality, virtual team cultures are similar to in-person, but there's a couple different emphases that make for a good culture, and leaders have to be deliberate in building these. They have to be deliberate in building what we call shared understanding. Everybody on the team knows the knowledge, skills, and abilities of everyone else. They know the context those people are working in. They know they know the situation of someone's family, right? It's really weird in the United States where you and I are. I mean, it seems like it varies by state and sometimes by city, how people are interacting. Some people are working while Zoom schooling their kids. Other kids are back in school. And so really working from home is awesome because you're alone, right? So it really varies, and we need to know that context. We also, and this is the big 2021 dilemma, is leaders help shape a culture of shared identity where everybody actually feels like they're part of one team. As we start having some people come back to the office some of the time, but not everybody back all of the time, there's going to be a real tendency for leaders to lean too much on the people they're co-located with and not think enough about those remote workers. And they can end up feeling unincluded. And like there's this us versus them that isn't about, you know, marketing versus legal anymore. It's the co-located versus the remotes. And that's really damaging for a team. And then the last thing I'll say around leadership and culture and what matters is a sense of psychological safety. You know, people need to feel, and this was true in co-located teams too, by the way, if you want to hire people and have them bring them whole selves to work and fully leverage all of their knowledge, skills, and abilities, they need to feel safe to speak up. They need to feel safe to disagree with you. They need to feel safe to take risks and try out new ideas and pull the learning from them and share that with the rest of the team. And if you're not building that in any team, that's damaging. In a remote team where your opportunities to speak up are much harder, right? Where your opportunity, maybe your manager never took you off mute, so you can't even speak up. But the opportunities to misread communication and feel disrespected are a lot higher. And so paying attention to those three things, shared understanding, shared identity, and a sense of psychological safety, that's where leaders of remote teams really need to focus, because that's going to make a huge difference in whether or not their team survives, thrives, or just sort of fiddles away in the remote darkness.
Well, and there's a lot there. And in thinking about that, I love what you said too about it's hard or can seem hard when you're one square in a Brady Bunch tile of people. And it could seem like what we typically think of as a great leader does big dynamic things, and it could seem like our tools aren't the ones that we had in a traditional setting. So how are some leaders breaking out of that and still creating bold cultures with all of these obstacles that we have today?
Yeah, so it's really about thinking about when the great work from home experiment began, we first started thinking about what can we do to just help people, what technologies we need to give people to help them do their day-to-day job, right? Just get the work done, right? And we didn't spend as much time thinking about what elements of a co-located office are intangible and help, and how to build those back deliberately. So it's you know, I hate to say it, it's less of a tools thing and more about how we use them. So I'll give you a great example, right? So you know, you probably remember this. I mean, it depends on the organization you're in, whether or not you love having your all team meetings or you hate them, right? You and I both spent time in academia and in schools. And I remember faculty meetings in the business school. Man, I hated those, right? They were like the worst 2 hours of my month. Because largely there were 25 or 30 faculty members there to talk about all a range of different issues. And I only actually needed to contribute to the conversation for about 15 minutes, but I had to be there the rest of the time, right? You don't have to do that now, right? You could actually break it up and have one purpose per meeting, for example, and only have meetings with the people who are relevant to that discussion and not waste everybody else's time. The thing I did like about faculty meetings, and the thing I think most people do like about their on-campus, you know, co-located meetings, is actually the little bit of buffer time before or after, right? You get there early and you kind of get some socialization time with people you may not have seen for a week or two, or afterwards, after you formally close the meeting, people linger and they kind of hang out and you build some team camaraderie in those moments. We don't do that on Zoom either, right? Or Microsoft Teams or whatever. We say the meeting starts at 11. Boom, we jump on at 11. Maybe we wait 2 or 3 minutes for everybody to come on, which is another pet peeve of mine. And then we get started. Instead of thinking about like, well, the meeting starts at 11, so why not tell people, hey, I'll be on at 10:45, just doing some tech checks and whatever. So if you want to come on early, it'd be great to see you a bit. Or how about when we adjourn the meeting, we just say, okay, well, that's all we have. But if you want to stay on, you know, we're right at the top. We're right at noon. We're right at lunchtime. If you want to just stay on and hang out for a bit, I'll leave the call open, right? Those little things rebuild that time that actually had a huge sense of bonding, a sense of keeping people updated with those little things. We used to keep people updated just by walking down the hall. Well, we can't, there's no hall to walk down anymore. So those little moments of buffer time are magical too. We didn't think about it in the first 6 or 9 months of this grand experiment. We just thought about how can we grab people the tools and the technology they need to get their normal stuff done. And we never thought about the things we were relying on to keep our team together that happened accidentally in a co-located environment that need to be deliberate in this remote one.
Hey, On Brand listeners. We talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged super fans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written 2 books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with 2 A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show. So I'm glad that we naturally came back to meetings here, which is kind of where we jokingly started our conversation. And you talk about buffer time, and we talked earlier about how we start strong with these best intentions, and then we sort of can peter out. And I think it gets back to the importance of that buffer time. And the other thing is this Zoom fatigue that I feel like we're hearing more and more about, because we, one, don't have that buffer time, and then we schedule ourselves for a 9 to 10, or a 9 and a 10 and an 11, yeah, and a 1 and a 2 and a 3. And we end up running oftentimes right up to that, and end up saying, I've got to hop off of this Zoom to another. So How can we build more buffer time back in, and also what are our best, if our dilemma, speaking of the choose your dilemma, is better Zoom meetings, what can we do to infuse some of this back in?
Yeah. So the very first thing I'll say to a team leader who's in charge of running all these meetings on a technology that you just learned about maybe 6 months ago is give yourself a tiny bit of grace. Right. I mean, remember, there's a lot of people saying, oh, well, Zoom meetings, they just don't work. Well, in-person meetings didn't work very well either. Right.
So, good point.
So give yourself a little bit of grace there. I think the biggest thing you can do is shoot to be shorter. You know, we already talked about the idea of maybe you break it up. My general rule of thumb is one purpose per meeting, right? And that one purpose should always be around something that is discussion or solicits input, right? We used to have these 2 hour long all hands meetings where we would also deliver information, because hey, if everyone's in the room, then we can guarantee that everyone saw this, right? Even if they were looking at their phone or whatever. You don't need to be delivering information in this virtual environment. You can record a video of you delivering those same slides and then just track who opened the file beforehand, right? Right. There are ways that you can reproduce that point. So the purpose for jumping on should be that discussion. I even encourage a lot of leaders to flip their agenda items, right? So instead of just saying like marketing, for example, or budget, right, as your agenda item, say, how can we get the same number of impressions with the 25% reduction in budget that we have? Okay, so now I know the purpose of this meeting is answering that question. And I know how to judge whether or not we had a good meeting or not is, did we answer that question, right? So I think those things are key. Paying attention to who is on, you do not need your entire team on every meeting, as we already talked about. Remember that the cost of a 1 hour meeting with all 10 people on your team is not 1 hour, it's 10 hours. Right. And it's probably more because you're pulling people away from doing the work that actually creates value. So know that and respect that and build your as light an attendee list as you can. And then I would say shoot for 30 minutes or 45 minutes so that this other, you know, this overlap thing doesn't happen. That's just sort of schedule and time management, is that realization that in a physical world, you knew you needed time to walk from one meeting room to another. So you sort of plan for that. In a virtual world, you think, oh, no problem. I'll just jump on and off call. You forget things like that you have to go to the bathroom sometimes in between those 2 calls. And now you're 5 minutes late, right? Or that so-and-so is talkative. And so you should probably tell them it's a 30-minute meeting so that you know it'll be a 45-minute meeting in your mind, right? Those little things. I think the other thing that we probably need to think about here too is when we're scheduling meetings. This is my biggest pet peeve, is a lot of virtual teams are scheduling meetings at what is actually one or two people on the team's lunch hour because of time zone differences. And so half the team is there fully in and the other half is trying to like simultaneously microwave some Easy Mac while also being on the call. And how productive is that, right? It's not very productive. And that problem, by the way, happened a long time ago when we, trying to do that shared understanding thing, glossed over the idea that we need to understand each other's time zones and schedules and calendars. and the fact that they're ever changing. Because, you know, we got, I'll give you a great example. We got a call. Both of my kids are actually in school as we're recording this in January 2021. But we got a call at 8:15 at night on Wednesday last week that our kid had been exposed. And so mandatory 10-day quarantine. So we got like 12 hours notice to figure out how we're going to watch him for the next 2 or 3 days while we work and juggle stuff, which means we need to be constantly aware of each other's schedules and schedule changes, and not just assume that whatever worked on campus, which was our all hands meeting is every Monday at 11, will still work. Right. So little things like that actually make a big difference. If I could boil it all down into one thing, I would say make it shorter, make it one agenda item per meeting, and preferably phrase that agenda item as a question. That way everyone knows that the purpose of getting together live and on Zoom is to get that question answered.
One item and one item as a question. Love it. That is so key. And I think, like you pointed out, and I love the chapter. I love a lot of the things in Leading from Everywhere, but especially that chapter on virtual communication, because so much of it comes back to it's easy to, I think, like, label them right now, and they definitely fit the moment, as you talk about being more clear and concise with what you're writing. And yes, we need that right now. But like you said, we always needed that.
That's the irony of some of this book, right? Is that a lot of the things are great principles of leading teams in general. The strategy is still the same. The tactics have changed a lot, and there's a lot of lack of familiarity with the new tools and tactics and that sort of stuff. But our goal, in some ways, is how do we use these tools to get back to the basics?
Well, and that's kind of what I was going to say, too. We talk a lot about it in marketing, the labels and the labels of right now, and that we're focused on you know, digital marketing, on all of these things, all these words that we put in front of marketing. And eventually it's just going to be marketing, because it's not going to be different. It's going to make up what we do. And I think as we look at virtual, at remote, at all of these things, these ideas that you're talking about, it's just going to become eventually here at some point work, right?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think inside the realm of leadership and team management, et cetera, I'm trying to avoid using the term lazy, but I can't think of a way to do it. So I'll just call them lazy. A lot of lazy managers and lazy team leaders relied on presence as their proxy for productivity, right? So, I know you're here every day at 8:45. You stay till 5:15. You're clearly one of my hardest workers. Well, maybe not, right? Ask your IT guys how much time is spent on YouTube and Facebook, right, every day. Maybe not, right? So that was always a terrible proxy. And of course, now we've had that ripped from us. And yeah, a lot of people then flipped it and made responsiveness the new form of presence and their little easy proxy for productivity. Well, it was never a good idea, but it's even more of a bad idea now. Now we need to get, like you said, much more clear and concise around our communication, and also much more clear and concise with shorter timeframes for our objectives and what we're working on, right? Some teams that thrive the most actually do, stolen from Scrum and the Agile world, do a daily stand-up, or at least a weekly check-in, or have a spreadsheet that's always updated with what did I just complete? What am I working on now? What's blocking my progress? So that everybody on the team can kind of see everything that's going on with each other at the same time. Because in addition to that flip from presence to responsiveness, which is a terrible idea, the other thing that happens is leaders end up managing 12 individual relationships instead of a team of 12 people. And so a lot of it, like you said, goes back to the basics, but we do need to recognize that some of the stuff we were relying on, just like we were talking about buffer time in meetings, some of the stuff we were relying on being co-located to solve for us, we can't rely on anymore, even when everyone is vaccinated and it's safe to go back and all of that sort of stuff, because not everyone's going to want to come back to that normal rhythm. I mean, there's a reason Dilbert was the number one comic strip in America for the longest time. There's a reason The Office was one of the most successful comedies of all time. People got the break, right, that they finally needed to avoid that. They're not going back to that.
Well, I heard someone, you know, there's been a lot of Office podcasts lately about the show The Office, and I've some analysis on it. And I've heard people say that people like the kind of quaint idea of it, because we may not go back to a dynamic like that of a bunch of people sitting all in an office together.
Yeah. I mean, I think I tend to be an optimist in all things. It's been, that's why actually the last year has been really depressing, right? Because I'm one of those optimists that's like, ah, this will be over by Easter.
When you've depressed an optimist, it's right.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, I tend to be an optimist about that. And I think that what I'm banking on is an office, but the office isn't going away. We're still going to go there. The struggle is going to be building a place where everyone feels welcome, but no one feels obligated to be there, right? Where you go because you're doing the team all hands meetings and a couple other like brainstorming sessions and things like that, but you don't feel that you need to be there any other time. So you're not just sitting there at 4:30 killing a half hour so that you can finally leave at 5, et cetera, right? Yeah. I hope that this is the thing that put an end to a lot of those elements. Imagine an office that you actually enjoy commuting to because it's seen as that one time every week where you get to see everyone all together because we're coming in for the Monday afternoon meeting where everyone gets synchronized. That sounds really cool and sounds a whole lot better than what we were doing before the pandemic. And so I'm hoping, right, that's the future we're headed for. I think the future of work is people working from anywhere. That's why the book's called Leading From Anywhere, because that's the future of leadership that a lot of people need to prepare for.
Well, speaking of that future, we're sitting here talking in January. It's the beginning of, as you noted, what's been a challenging year. And I love what you said about folks need to give themselves some grace in the adaptions that we've made to all of this. But in looking ahead, in looking at what we're going to be continuing to grapple with, what's one thing you think folks aren't thinking about enough that they should be, that should be on their radar here in the new year ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's a lot of leaders, especially at the senior leader level, that aren't thinking enough about the fact that a large percentage of their workforce does not want to come back Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And so that changes a lot more than you think, right? I think a lot of people are like, okay, what's going to be our flexible work policy? But that changes a lot more than you think. If people only have to be there once a week or twice a month or something like that, well, then people are going to live anywhere, right? So that means that whether or not you adjust salaries for cost of living is a question. What your benefits are. Now, if you were a small business and everybody was in the same city, so you only ever had to deal with one state's employment practices, well, now you don't. You know, you're a national or international company immediately, you know, pretty soon, once it's safe to move around internationally again. And I think a lot of people aren't thinking about that level of ramifications. You know, we're sitting here talking about how benefits are going to change. What happens when people don't want an office, but they do want a stipend to buy a membership to a co-working space? How's that going to get handled? You know, there's a lot of downstream effects of this work from anywhere future that I don't think people have thought enough about, because I think we still labor under this assumption that we're going back to Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And, you know, that'll be true for probably 50% of the workforce, or maybe even the majority, barely, of the workforce, but a large percent. I mean, the COVID didn't do anything other than accelerate the percentage of people who wanted to work remotely. And so if we're not using this as the opportunity to learn and prepare for that future, then we're kind of wasting a bit of an opportunity here.
Well said, well said. And certainly, one thing to think about, but one thing that is, as you just noted there, sort of yields several other big issues as well. And now for something slightly lighter than that, what is, David, a brand that has made you smile recently?
Yeah, so I am a massive, and I'm biased here because I've gotten to know the three heads of the company, but I'm a massive fan of this brand Pila. It started out as just Pila case, but now they make a lot of other stuff, and they make cell phone cases, but unlike most cell phone cases, they're not made from plastics. They're made from corn and soy farming byproduct. I actually don't really understand the chemistry, but what I know is that they biodegrade, right? Especially if you compost them, they biodegrade in like 10 years instead of 10,000 in a landfill. And so they've always been like a brand that makes me smile in that regard. But during, especially in April, May, and June of the coronavirus pandemic, they ran a really cool promotion that I didn't see as, you know, it seemed like every brand was doing that in these trying times, right? And it just got, I mean, first of all, I'm an optimist, so it got a big bummer. But But they were a lot smarter with it. And they said, hey, we don't know what the deal with Corona on surfaces is, but we know you should probably be disinfecting your phone case much more often. So from here until the end of the pandemic, if you buy one case, we'll send you two. That way you always have a case on your phone and you always have one that you can disinfect and set aside and let dry. And I just thought it was a brilliant way for an already kind of environmentally conscious brand to also be health conscious quickly as well. I have no idea what it did to their margins or whatever, and I don't think they knew or cared. They just knew it was the right thing to do. And so they've made me smile in a lot of ways, and I keep watching all of the different extensions that they have. But Pela, P-E-L-A, there's a little tilde on the E, and that's how you get from Pela to Pela, I guess. But they've made me smile a lot in the last couple of years.
Awesome. That is an amazing story and a fun brand, and certainly smile-worthy in lots of different ways. David, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so you and I, Nick, have something in common, which is we have really rare, weird last names. And so davidberkus.com has been open, and I've had it for years now, even before, as soon as I learned how to buy domains, right? Unlike those poor saps, you know, Adam Smith, it's been taken forever. So davidberkus.com is probably the best place to go. We've got info on the new book there. We've got a lot of resources, including we talked about virtual meetings a lot, including a checklist on how to run a great virtual meeting, if that's helpful to you. So we've got a lot of those free resources, more on the book, et cetera, all there at davidberkus.com.
That is awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. David, thanks for being on brand with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And as a reminder, if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.